You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to another episode of Stick Together, your weekly National Union Radio show. This show was produced on the lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respect to their elders past and present and recognise the ongoing impact of colonisation across the nation. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land. Stick Together is a national radio show that focuses on union news, social justice and workplace issues. This episode is brought to you with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation and played to you through the radio community radio network to your local community radio station and podcasted across the world. Thank you to the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their ongoing support. Now let's hear some union news. UWU New South Wales and Crown Casino. 70 UWU members at Crown Casino in Sydney walked off the job last week. The industrial action is the first ever taken at Crown in Sydney, and workers at the casino are paid just 7 cents above minimum wage and earn $7.94 per hour less than their colleagues at the Melbourne casino. Workers want more than Crown's most recent offer of a 9.25% wage increase over 3 years. QTU, the Queensland Public School Teachers Union, had an estimated 50,000 public school teachers in Queensland on strike for 24 hours a couple of weeks ago now. Teachers in Brisbane rallied at Parliament House and elsewhere held mass public union meetings. This has been part of an ongoing grassroots campaign that has been raised in opposition to what is being offered by the state government. Teachers and their union are adamant that they will not accept state government's wages policy of 8% over 3 years. They've also announced a series of after-school rallies kicking off in Bundaberg. Teachers are rallying in Gladstone, and there are more actions to follow in Gold Coast and Cairns. Staying in Queensland, and the QPFU, Queensland Firefighters, Queensland Professional Firefighters Union, has made an in-principle agreement with the state government that includes a state wage policy of 3% increase in the first year, 2.5% in the second and third years, as well as additional allowances in the three-year agreement. The agreement also includes operational adjustments when workers respond to electrical vehicle and home battery fires due to the increased risks that they pose while fighting those fires. That agreement is still waiting for members to endorse the agreement. And to Victoria, SU Vic Brophy, who had an agreement which expired 15 years ago. Workers at the Regional Community Services Organisation have been fighting for a new EBA since September 2023. The ASU filed a bargaining dispute with the Fair Work Commission in June. Brophy's position on wages has steadfastly remained at 1.5% above award wages. Workers have consistently voted against this and voted for industrial action, and workers during the week participated in work stoppage. HACSU, the Health and Community Sectors Union Victoria, continue their industrial action. Public sector mental health workers have been taking industrial action for most of this year, and we've had a couple of stories covering this, not just in the union news, but some longer ones if you want to listen back to some of those episodes as well. HACSU union officials are back at the Fair Work Commission this week. And that's it for union news this week. Welcome everybody to Stick Together, and I'm your host James, and on this week's episode we're going to be speaking to former ASU delegate Jeff, who went through a lengthy process of trying to classify his position and position of others within the organisation he was working at. And, you know, I think there'll be some listeners who are aware of some of the things around the SHADS Award, which is the award that covers the social and community services workers. But unlike other industries, such as, you know, teachers and nurses and things like that, where people move up progressions in a kind of organised way and, you know, different positions are set to those pay points, the ASU has been working for quite a while now as part of their campaigns to help strengthen the sector, to have set pay points, pay progression for workers such as case managers, which is a position we're going to be talking about today, and probably one of the more common titles around the community sector. But this is still an ongoing campaign. So I thought it'd be interesting to hear a story from former ASU delegate about how they were able to kind of get that to, get that kind of position to be won within their workplace. So Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, James.
So can you tell us, I think listeners will be interested, not just those in the, social community sector, but, those in other areas as well, about how do you go about this kind of process, and you ended up in Fair Work and had a, spoiler, but a positive outcome in the end. But maybe if you can take us back, and I know this happened a couple of years ago now, but if you could take us back to the start and how you became aware of the issue, and we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, sure. It was a few years ago, and obviously I was the ASU delegate. We had quite a small union presence at the time, and the CEO of the small non-for-profit company I was working for sent around an email basically saying that there wouldn't be any pay rises or any pay point progressions for that year because they were in a budget crisis. And, as the ASU delegate, I kind of thought, well, wait a second, we kind of haven't had any reviews for a while, and any pay increases in the last few years. So I kind of looked into it a little bit more, contacted the ASU head office, had some discussions with them, and they kind of helped me investigate it a bit. And we kind of realized that the company that I was working for at the time wasn't really following, their own policies and procedures and the overall Shad's Award in itself. And so from that, kind of investigation, we basically uncovered that we're also being underpaid under the Shad's Award. So No one had gotten pay point progressions, and no one had yearly reviews. And so that kind of sparked the bigger systemic issues going on at the company. And overnight, our union membership kind of increased, which was good for us. It was a shame it wasn't bigger at the time, but, it was good for the ASU. And essentially, we realized that they had classified us at a 5.3, but we're paying us at a 4.2 under the Shad's Award. So they're underpaying us. They weren't doing their, yearly reviews. And that kind of sparked the whole saga, which continued.
So most people, might have, like you sort of saying, their review or some kind of process, but generally around the end of the financial year, people, all things going to plan, would move up a progression. They might have a ceiling of that, but generally, if someone is at, 5.1, and if they've been there for a year, they might move up to 5.2. And like you're saying, that hadn't happened for a couple of years. And I guess the other point there is, the part of the campaign I mentioned at the start is that the ASU is trying to get all case managers to be starting from Shad's 5. Mm. But a lot of positions are from Shad's 4. And yeah, you had been classified at 5 and then were suddenly being paid at Shad's 4.
Yeah, kind of, when we brought in the ASU through our kind of digging down into the pay point progressions, we kind of looked at there's indicators for, things that a case manager under a Shad's 4 does, and there's tasks under a Shad's 5 that a case manager does, and we kind of had to look at what our daily tasks were under those kind of two different classifications. And it was quite clear that the company had classified us as a Shad's 5, so they felt we were a Shad's 5. And then when you took our daily tasks and what we're doing day in, day out as case managers, it aligned with a Shad's 5. It was just unfortunately that they were paying us at a Shad's 4 rate in that case. And we kind of knew all along the work we were doing day in, day out was a Shad's 5. And the company knew it, and that's why they classified us as that. And, it kind of comes down to the company and many companies out there, I think, kind of just picking and choosing where you start rather than there being kind of a baseline of where we start. And I think most case managers within the industry, within that community sector, I think their jobs clearly fit at a Shad's 5.
Mm. And I think, one of the things that's often used as a not-for-profit that you're working at, and a lot of something that's used a lot in the sector, I would say, is that You know, a lot of people get into the industry as a way to support others. They've got, you know, social justice sort of at their heart of the kind of work that they're trying to do. And sometimes that's used against people in terms of the way that, you know, people are not getting into it for the money per se, but people still need to be paid adequately for the work that they're doing. And sometimes, you know, organizations will lean on those kind of pull at the heartstrings of workers to like, kind of not pay them properly.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something we ran into with that particular company. They were leaning on, you know, when the underpayment was paid out and the kind of misclassification, you know, came to a head, they kind of really leaned on like, well, we're a non-for-profit. We don't have the money to pay you at a Shads 5, in spite of them kind of classifying us as a Shads 5. And that, like I said, day-to-day work, meeting the indicators of a Shads 5 award. And you know, there was lots of back and forth with that, you know, pulling at the heartstrings, as you said, like trying to say, look, we're a non-for-profit. You're not in this, you know, to make money. You're in it to help people. And yeah, at the end of the day, we're like, oh, of course, that's true. We're not in it for that. But we're also in it to be paid what we're, you know, we're owed and deserve, really.
And so what was that process like? So from, you know, you said that you'd received some advice and information from the union and there was an increase in union membership. And how did that kind of progress then to take that kind of information back to management?
Yeah, well, I think I'll go from the start, I guess. And the CEO of the company sent out an email saying, you know, there's going to be no pay increases, as I said. And that kind of sparked some interest in a lot of the workers there. And we realized that, yeah, there hadn't been the yearly reviews. There hadn't been any pay increases or anything of that nature. And so basically I called the union, the ASU, and they kind of came in, held a meeting. As I said, there was quite low membership at the time, but we were able to kind of get non-members there. And the union and the ASU basically were able to present to the rest of the staff who aren't union members that, you know, you're being underpaid and you're misclassified and you haven't had your yearly review and your pay point progression, even if you were classified a 4 or whatnot. And so that kind of took the union from, you know, very small number to almost, you know, I would say around 90% of the company at the time. And as I said, it would have been better to have more people earlier, but it really started the ball rolling.
Probably not the desired outcome the CEO had with that initial email. But it's amazing, yeah, how some, you know, I guess in struggle, how much the union membership or, you know, other kind of collective struggle, how much that can grow when there's a kind of battle that people are forced to kind of go up against.
Yeah, I think one of the aspects of that incident as well is that they sent that email around saying that we wouldn't be getting pay increases, but then 2 weeks later, took a management trip to Tasmania to do company planning. So they're claiming they're in a budget crisis, but they could afford to take management on a, you know, all expenses paid trip. And that really didn't, you know, sit right with people. And that's why a lot of people attended that union meeting I spoke about. And we went from, you know, 10% union membership to probably 90% union membership.
And obviously, yeah, there's a process from that to ending up in Fair Work. What are the kind of steps that need to be taken in order to get there? And then I guess, yeah, going on to like, what was the experience like at Fair Work?
Yeah, it was quite a lengthy process. It went for quite a while, but initially, obviously, there was just lots of back and forth between union organizers, myself as a delegate, and the staff and management. And you know, they basically conceded that the union was correct and that we had been underpaid. However, they pulled a bit of a dodgy on us, and that whilst they admitted we were being underpaid and we hadn't been receiving, you know, pay point progressions and things like that, they overnight reclassified us without consultation. So I went from a Shads level 5 pay point 3 to a Shads level 4 pay point 1. And they backpaid us from that. So an example would be like I was owed 5 years of back pay at a level five pay point 3. They overnight reclassified me and then backpaid me from the lower classification level. Again, that increased our union membership, and the kind of debating and consultation went back and forth, but basically we got nowhere with management. They had reclassified us without consultation. So we made some applications to, we made an application to Fair Work and took it to the Fair Work Tribunal. And basically the Fair Work Tribunal agreed with us. However, unfortunately, they didn't really have any measures or avenues to enforce their kind of their statements and their agreements with us. So basically the company did nothing. So whilst they acknowledged, okay, we've lost in this Fair Work Tribunal, they really didn't do anything.
Yeah, that's disappointing, I guess, to get all of that work to that point. And, you know, I guess some of these, the Fair Work Commission and Tribunal and things like that are not necessarily set up to support unions and workers. So it, is a difficult space, but, you know, I understand, like, it still progressed from there.
Yeah, that's right. So we continued. Obviously, we weren't going to just roll over and let that happen. You know, that had, what management had done had basically pissed a lot of people off. Like, you know, you can't reclassify people overnight without consultation. As the ASU said, that's just blatantly illegal.
It sounds like they really tried to kind of just do little pity sort of things on the way to hope that you would stop, though.
Yeah, that's right. That, you know, they're trying to, you know, they backpaid us a smaller amount and did a few things that tried to make themselves, you know, look like they were taking action, but really they were doing nothing. And, you know, they actually, at the same time, I think, you know, we had really started to more organize, as a team and, through the ASU, and we had started to also try and, collective bargain to even, get a, you know, EBA in place. And, the company pretended that they were, you know, interested in that process, but they went out and hired a manager who was on his website known as an anti-union busting manager. So, you know, they were throwing us little bones, but really in the background, really trying to stifle everything that we did. And obviously, as I said, we weren't going to just take what the Fair Work, you know, Commission and Tribunal said and not let, you know, not have it implemented. So as a membership and as the ASU supported us, we kept fighting basically, and we took it back to Fair Work a second time, and they basically told us that we had to go through mediation. We went through mediation. That didn't really do much either, because, you know, the company wasn't interested in doing the right thing basically.
So just wondering with that, so the first point was at the Tribunal and then to the Fair Work Commission, is that so? Do you need to have you know, I guess in other courts, like if you want to take the same case somewhere, you need to have new information or to kind of like take it into the court again, or you need to take it to the higher court, so, you know, from the, you know, up to the high court, I guess, you know, depending on if you think that court wasn't satisfactory in being able to get the outcome you wanted. Is that the same for the Fair Work as well?
Yeah. Look, it was, and you know, this kind of case this kind of situation unraveled quite quickly, and things kept happening. So the original time we took it to Fair Work was about the misclassification and the failure to implement pay point progression, and then, you know, as I said, we had the outcome that wasn't implemented, but then we took it back on a second occasion when they reclassified us without consultation.
Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the new evidence that allowed you to take it back. Yeah.
Yeah. So we took it back the second time through the, you know, with the union support, basically saying that they've obviously known they've done something incorrectly here, and they're obviously trying to cover their tracks, so to speak. Mm-hmm. That's why they've reclassified us. That's why they've sent, you know, communications out to staff, changed our classifications on pay slips, backpaid us at this lower amount. So it was almost like they were admitting their own guilt, but trying to kind of sweep it under the carpet, so to speak.
You're listening to Stick Together with your host, James, and we're joined today with Jeff, who is a former ASU delegate, and we're just, hearing about a story of Jeff's from a reclassification into a community, a social and community sector role. So Jeff, now tell us about, I guess kind of moving through that period, and it sounds like it was kind of stonewalled from the organization sort of all the way through. And like we heard before, sort of little bits of information were, pieces they were kind of offering to kind of stop the negotiation as it was kind of going ahead. What happened when you got to the Fair Work Commission? And, you know, I understand it's probably a pretty lengthy process, and we're not going to read through the whole document there that I'm sure is a pretty thick piece of evidence there. But what was the outcome like? And I guess, one thing that might be really interesting for listeners as well is, what was it like kind of being a part of that process, like as a worker kind of being there, or as a delegate kind of being there as well? I'm sure that there was lawyers or ASU reps that were part of the process as well. But it's a pretty daunting process to kind of be part of that. And obviously that's not your job. You know, you're trying to do your job as well as kind of taking on this extra stress of supporting yourself and other workers. What was the kind of feeling like to be part of that?
Yeah, I think when I think about that time, it was exciting to be part of such a movement for worker justice, really. But I think it also put a bit of a target on my back, obviously, with management, and definitely experienced some adverse behaviors from management, we'll say, like. It was a lengthy process. From probably start to finish, it was around 5 years before we had an outcome. And, it was a battle to continue doing that work. And, we're, like you said earlier, we're there for our clients. We're there to support people. You know, we care about community. But also, wearing that, kind of second hat of supporting staff and getting what we were owed. And, yeah, it was a lot of, engaging with ASU, attending meetings, meeting with lawyers, attending the Fair Work tribunals. It was quite a lot of work. And I loved it, I must say, though. I loved it. I loved that fight for justice and fight for the workers. And, from the Fair Work, this kind of two Fair Work tribunals or two Fair Work situations we had, we didn't get necessarily the outcome we wanted. So, as a team and with the ASU, we decided to keep pushing it, and we took it to federal court eventually. And, that involved more lawyers, and, the ASU engaged lawyers and barristers, and there was lots of meetings and preparation of collating all the emails and all the stuff that had occurred. And, it was a balance. It was a real juggle, I'll say, to balance, your day-in-day work with also, that fight for justice, really. I'm very proud of everyone that was involved. No one ever really gave up. There were people that kind of left the work or dropped off. But as a team, everyone kind of stuck it out. And we had been, in our opinion, and I think the judgments had been done wrong by, and we saw it through all the way to the end.
And I guess, that kind of sums up some of the work of being a delegate, is that it is a difficult kind of job of balancing the kind of normal work that you have to do, any other just things you're doing in life as well, and carrying on like a little bit of extra pressure on yourself from looking out for members when things pop up, being a part of these kind of difficult issues, but I guess also just always having that target on your back from management as well. It sounds like it was a really positive outcome in the end, and shows the positive nature of being involved in collective struggle.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, without everyone being so united, really, it would have made it much more difficult. But, through the ASU, through the union, having those, meetings, continually having open communication, and presenting to staff what had happened, we were really able to stay together. And as I said, I think possibly some workplaces and some people might have given up maybe after the first two kind of fair work tribunals. But as I said, I think we had such open communication and we're so united in this struggle, really, that no one was willing to give up. And that's how we progressed it eventually into the federal court and, you know, through the ASU, through lawyers. And I don't think, you know, that might not have happened had we not been so united. And, you know, even me as a delegate, if I hadn't had the backing of a good union membership, it would have made it that much harder because when we took it to federal court, we rather than do a class action case, we took it individually. So I think we had something like 20 or something like individual cases in the federal court. We did that partly because we wanted to sting the company a little bit, make them pay for lawyers on each occasion. But they took my case first as a kind of, I guess, test case. And if I were to win in the federal court, that would kind of have the flow-on effect down to the rest of the members.
Sending a precedent to those, yeah. Well, yeah, I think, like you said before, I guess it's always good to have high union membership. But it also shows that even if you are at a workplace that is a small organization with a smaller membership, it doesn't take much that can kind of spark something that can really lead to, you know, really growing your membership overnight and leading to something that can have a really successful outcome. So thanks so much for coming in today, Jeff, and sharing your story. I think it's something that's, inspiring to others. And some of that process of fair work and things like that can feel really daunting and just a bit unknown. So great to shed some light for other listeners about what that process could look like for them if they're ever having to face that.
Thanks, James.
You've been listening to Stick Together. Thanks so much to Jeff for joining us on the episode today. I've been your host, James. And if you'd like to hear more episodes of Stick Together, you can go to the 3CR website or you can listen back to any of our podcasts. Remember, wherever you are, whatever you do, there's a union for you. Until next time, stick together.
To finish the show, we're going to hear a song called I Need Therapy by Bagel.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.